All please rise.
And to work through.
Join in the salute to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. The clerk will now take the roll call.
Councilmember Hanson?
Here.
Councilmember Olson?
Here.
Councilmember Ingram?
Here.
Councilmember Mutchler?
Here.
Councilmember Bush?
Here.
Okay, so previously, Councilperson Goodrich has been excused, and Councilperson Watson is aiding her brother. She'd asked to be excused.
I'd move to excuse Councilmember Watson.
Second.
Seconded by Councilperson Ingram. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, that carries. Okay, next up is the public comment period. This is the time in the agenda that people from the audience can speak to the council on anything that's not on tonight's agenda, anything's not on tonight's agenda. So, would anyone like to go forward? He's pointing at you. In the council.
Ladies first.
There you go. Huh? Welcome.
Reverend Arlene Ferguson, 5606 First Avenue, Ferndale. I was listening to the tape of the executive session where Carol was asked to recuse herself from the meeting because of her knowledge of, she and her husband's knowledge of, the Roysches. Okay, so I can't really wrap my head around that. I was thinking about Mel, do you have any idea how many hundreds of children you have taught who are now parents and even grandparents? Countless numbers. So yes. Should you make a list of all of the people that know Mel so that if any issue comes up involving council or any government issues that Mel would have to recuse himself? I mean, that seems absolutely absurd. So when you put your hat on to become a judge, an attorney, a council member, your political, sexual, religious orientation stays at the door. So, otherwise, none of you would even be able to meet. Not only you, no government body anywhere. If you were to tally all the differences and go, oh, well, she knows him, therefore, can't talk to, can't let them on in this meeting. I think you need to take a real serious look at assuming that no one can be impartial when they are putting on the hat of any role that is an official role. Any questions?
Questions for this guest, Councilperson Bursch?
I just want to make sure that you are aware that that was not an executive session recording. That was a turn back into a public meeting.
Okay.
Which was recorded.
Okay.
What you heard, not the executive session.
Okay. So the issue still remains the same, assuming that one cannot remain unbiased when assuming the role of any position, any official, legal or government position. Yes?
Councilperson Mutchler?
Reverend, I'm not going to speak to this issue, but I don't know if you're familiar with the appearance of fairness doctrine. There was a council action about 2 months ago that would have bearing on a family member of mine. And although I'm convinced I could have made a decision impartially and fairly and in the right spirit and integrity, I chose to accuse myself because it could appear such. And I'm not speaking to any other situation, but maybe it's just to consider what we call the appearance of fairness doesn't necessarily imply that we think there is unfairness.
But then, like, where does that tail end? I mean, that thread, it's just... Anybody can appear to be anything. You know, it appears that you're a this, and it appears that you seem to think that way. Go on the hard facts, the way the person actually votes or what they do, whatever their job is. Then I say, if you all say, gee, you know, this seems pretty prejudicial, then do something. But starting off, you know, out the door with it's impossible for any of you to be objective, I think is insulting to all of you.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Okay, next up, sir. Welcome.
My name is Jim Pettinger at 2245 Lancaster Way in Ferndale. I'm also the owner of International Market Access Incorporated down on Slater Road. And I'm also a director of the Ferndale Chamber. And so I wanted to announce tonight or remind some of you that a week from Thursday, at the Silver Reef Event Center, the Ferndale Chamber will be presenting the second annual Cross-Border Expo. And our goal with the Cross-Border Expo is to use the location of Whatcom County to be a gateway to the United States for Canadians. There's 2.5 million Canadians just across the border, but also to represent Whatcom County as a gateway to Canada for Americans, particularly Americans from Washington State. So a week from Thursday, we'll be having a trade show at the Event Center. We already have 61 booth space taken up. We have about 10 left to go, so we'd be happy to have more. One of the highlights will be at 5:30. We're having a multi-chamber networking events with lots of hors d'oeuvres and a hosted bar. We're inviting Chamber of Commerce and other association executives from both sides of the border. We have our two seminars that we did last year. One is called Doing Business in the USA, which will be attractive to Canadians. We're having another seminar called Investing in U.S. Real Estate, which will bring some folks down, I hope. And then this year, as a new seminar, we're having Doing Business in Canada, and this is being organized by the Small Business Development Center here in Whatcom County in Bellingham, but we're also having people from Spokane and Seattle come up to speak. We're having someone from the Canadian Consulate in Seattle come up to speak. So it's going to be a fun day, and our theme is come for the day, stay for the weekend. So we also have tourism behind us, and what we're trying to do is promote Whatcom County as a tourist destination as well. We have door prizes. The Semiamo has donated overnight and rounds of golf. Silver Reef has donated a spa package and so on. So I've given Sam a booklet of free tickets. The event's free anyways, but if you don't have a business card to put in the barrel for the grand prize draw, you can put your name on the back of the ticket. So love to have you all come out and support it and tell everybody in Ferndale about it. Let's make it a great event. Thank you all.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else for the open speaking period? Okay, Papa John, it looks like you're probably up. Welcome.
Thank you. Papa John, 6072 Malloy Avenue, Malloy Adult Family Home. I'm here tonight, i.e., which means I'm sure you know, in explanation. And I'm not sure that everybody is here who perhaps needs to be here, but I don't know who's on first. But I'm here in two senses of the word. I'm here horizontally as a citizen of Ferndale, and hopefully one who wants to be a good citizen of Ferndale, an active citizen of Ferndale. But I'm also here vertically as one who is a citizen of he who is ultimately wisdom, and he who I endeavor to serve every day, my Father in Heaven. And I come here, and when I come each time, I come with both ideas in mind. In terms of the horizontal, I do come not without political experience myself, which is part of the reason why I come. Over the years, I've been elected to a number of offices and unelected to some. I did run for a Charter Review Commission last time, but I was with FEMA in Florida at the time where they had four hurricanes, and so I could not campaign and I didn't get it. But they did have some excellent candidates who did. I've also, among the other things I've run for, is the Electoral College. I didn't get that either, but again, some more qualified people than I did get to positions. And my point is, both as a elected official and as a citizen, I've attended many, 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 many meetings in my lifetime, with at the local level, at the county level, at the state level. Been down to Olympia a number of times to testify on a number of issues. I know most of the state representatives from this county, if not all of them. Most of the ones who have been here for a time at the county level, et cetera, et cetera. And my point of saying this is that I come with that experience in my mind. I do want to recite a couple of things that I think are pertinent, germane to what I'm trying to say here tonight, that have applied to me. You have to judge yourself whether any of them apply to you or not. But one is, there is none more blind than he who will not see. The second, a corollary, is what we see depends on what we're looking for. That's both figuratively and literally. The third is that what we hear depends on what we're listening to. And so my point is even there, that is germane to what I'm trying to say here. As far as my vertical experience is concerned, I either have had or worked towards a total of 6 different degrees. 2 of them, some relating to education, which I have a 20-year experience in, some relating to the seminary year in Bible college, or my undergraduate before that, total of about 6 years relating to that issue. And
I'll give you 2, but you want to roll to what your point is.
Okay, yeah. Well, the point is that what you do is serious, okay? In some cases, it's very serious. But it's not like when I was a police officer, I saw a wound in the head with people grasping for air before they died. I also saw my own wife at the age of 44, mother of my 5 children at the time, the youngest of whom was 5, 1 7-year-old, die right in front of me of a very horrendous death, Legionnaire's disease. So I'm saying to you, that is extremely important. This is not life or death you're dealing with here. Okay, it is important. It is even perhaps very important. And my point of sharing that with you is I come to one who sat where you're sitting in a figurative sense and bored to tears. It's not fun. And so I come here with the intent of trying to be one of you and also to share some humor that from everything I understand, both biblically and scientifically, is supposed to be a positive thing, a helpful thing, a beneficial thing. And the whole purpose of me sharing this with you is so you understand why I come each time and why I like to pick on him because he's got a good sense of humor even if he is big. But that's my purpose. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else for the open comment period? Seeing none? Okay, we'll move on. Council before you is the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. I think Councilperson Birch kind of moved to approve, I would assume.
Yes.
And seconded by Councilperson Birch. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed. Motion carries. Okay, moving on, the public hearing non-conforming use provisions. Our community development planning director, Mr. Burnett, will speak first. Welcome, sir.
Good evening, Council. Good evening, Mr. Mayor. We have before you an open record public hearing. It's a zoning text amendment that's being proposed to amend the non-conforming chapter. And as I say in the staff report, and I think as you just said, non-conforming use, it's also non-conforming lots and structures. Essentially, what non-conformities are those uses, lots, or structures that were created prior to a regulatory change. You have an old barn that was created 100 years ago, and then zoning came in, and all of a sudden agriculture is no longer allowed. But non-conformities are allowed to continue. They are grandfathered in. In that way, they're protected. They're allowed to continue for as long as the property owner wishes to continue them. But on the flip side, they have restrictions placed on them. Typically, they're not allowed to expand. In some cases, some cities have placed a certain time period through which they will amortize over time, and they might have 5 years or 10 years after the zoning change before a new use has to be established. So the city of Ferndale has non-conforming regulations. Up until 2009, the regulations stated that non-conformities are not encouraged to survive. And while that was created in 1974, that phrase, it came to the council's attention in 2009 that was possibly sending a really negative message to some property owners that their most expensive investment was not a desirable part of the community. So in 2009, the council changed the non-conforming chapter to more or less eliminate that phrase. Unfortunately, and we can say unfortunately because we have the benefit of hindsight, that change didn't also change the rest of the chapter. So what we were left with was a chapter that said one thing and did another, or did a couple of other things. So it's made it really difficult for staff to be able to administer the code. It's tough for property owners to understand what the code intended to say. And at a joint meeting in February with the Planning Commission and Council, we found that there was some disagreement over what we thought that it actually said. So that really underlined to me the need to amend the code section, which was a pretty daunting task, because we have about 3,000 or 4,000 different lots throughout Ferndale. We've got 15 or so different zones, and trying to come up with what does nonconformity mean in each of those different lots in each of these different zones would be difficult. It's tough to take that bite out of the apple. So what Council and the Planning Commission directed us to do was to start off small, start off with really one of our smaller zones, our smallest zone, the city center zone, and talk about what nonconformity means there. The Planning Commission and I believe the Council felt that we need to be more restrictive, have more strenuous regulations limiting nonconformities in a city center zone than in other zones, because it is so small and because we have such specific regulations for future development in the city center zone over and above what we have in any other zone. So the Planning Commission's met monthly since February, and we've worked hard with our city attorney, Dan and Traxler. We've also consulted with the Municipal Research Services Center and looked at dozens of other cities. What we have proposed for you tonight is a chapter that changes the arrangement of the nonconforming chapter to make it more clear, to include a definition section, a purpose section, to put the onus on the property owner to demonstrate that they have a legal nonconformity and not just a very old barn, as I used in an example. That will make it more easy to administer and to understand. The major policy changes are not a change in most zones, where we continue the flexibility in every other zone besides the city center zone that allows nonconformities to continue to even expand for new uses to come into nonconforming structures and to allow the allowances we already have for lots. The major change is in the city center zone, where we identify nonconforming single-family residences as uses that are not allowed to expand, that really, while they're allowed to continue and to have their typical repairs and maintenance continue, the objective of the proposed chapter is to not incentivize those nonconformities, but rather start the process, and it will be a gradual process, towards conforming. As I said, we've talked with MRSC and the city attorney. What we have done, one of the main questions Planning Commission had, can you focus on one zone and have different regulations between that zone and others? The answer is yes, we can. There's numerous examples of other jurisdictions doing it. It's a small zone. It's non-conforming single-family residences in a city center zone that are really the focus. The Planning Commission has recommended approval unanimously. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. And again, this is an open record public hearing.
Public hearing, so questions of a technical nature, not of a opinion nature. Any questions? Councilperson Bursch?
Can you tell us what the city zone, how far out it extends, the parameters?
Certainly. We, right here, are just on the outskirts of the zone. The zone takes it from the Nooksack River, this side of the Nooksack River, west to just the other side of Hamlin, the west side of Hamlin. It takes it up to Vista, but not across Vista. It takes it down to Alder, but not across Alder. So it's really these two blocks we're talking about extending west.
Any other questions on this issue? Okay. Seeing none. Okay, well, then we're going to go into the public hearing.
Public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in their decision-making process. Written comments may also be submitted to the city clerk prior to beginning the hearing. The mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Audience members who have signed up prior to the beginning of the meeting will be called first to speak at this public hearing. If you're unable to sign up before the meeting, you'll be given an opportunity to address the council once we've got through all the speakers listed on the hearing sheets. We have none on the hearing sheets, so you can just raise your hands and we'll allow you to speak. Each speaker should state his or her name, address to the record, and be given 3 minutes to address the council. When a large group of individuals supports the same position on an issue, we encourage the selection of one or two representatives to speak on behalf of the entire group. So at 6:20:36, we'll open the public hearing. Does anyone wish to speak on this? You're all just enthusiastically ready to just raise your hands and come forward to speak. Okay, great. At 6:20:50, we will close the public hearing and turn it back over to our planning director.
I'm happy to answer any other questions that you might have.
Councilperson Mutchler.
Yeah, first of all, I want to commend staff for focusing on the city center. I think I would have more questions if this was citywide. The record will show that I've always supported the city center as a very special, unique area. Frankly, I wish it was a little bigger, but that's a different discussion. My only concern, and it is, I think, an important one, is page 35, middle paragraph, talks about that the Planning Commission recommends that only the part of the structure, and by the way, this is non-conforming uses, is the category, that the Planning Commission recommends that the part of the structure used as an office or some other use should lose its non-conforming status, and that a single-family residence should be allowed to continue in the remainder of the structure, which I understand that to mean is if a home was a residence and then a user then changes a part of it, it might be the garage, might be a living room or a kitchen, becomes something else. At that point, that piece of the home, that small piece of it, is permanently no longer able to once again become a residential portion. Is that correct?
That is correct. And I'll explain, I think, the philosophy of the Planning Commission a little bit. This issue was actually raised, I think, by Mayor Jensen, where, as we have seen over time, there have been residences where either the current property owner or new property owner wishes to convert, say, the bottom floor to a nail salon, to an office space, to something else. And when or if those new commercial businesses don't work, quite often we either see that property owner saying, it didn't work, now I want to convert it back into a single-family residence, or they put it on the market and advertise it as a single-family residence. I think that the Planning Commission's concern and my concern as well would be you tend to take one step forward towards compliance and then one step back. And at some point, looking through the literature on nonconformities, at some point the city has the ability to say, you know, enough is enough. We're moving towards a path to conformity, which is a difficult thing to say. It would be easier for us to simply say, as soon as you convert any one part, the rest of it also has to go. We're kind of taking that middle range. Another easy part would be to say, you can go ahead and switch one part back and forth over time, but we don't really actually get anywhere that way, from my perspective.
Yeah, and do we find this pattern partial in other cities, taking part of a home? Because I'm thinking enforcement. I'm just thinking person using this part of the house maybe for a salon or a insurance office, and the next person is going to use the garage instead and then wants to live there and moving around. And obviously, we can't enforce that very easily. It becomes sort of complex. It's troublesome to me.
It does.
As much as I want to see us move forward, I feel like we're pushing people forward. This sort of has a shoving people forward feel to it.
Well, nonconformities are complex. I mean, you know, I think every city does need to deal with this in one form or another. One of the things that this would allow us to do is, in order for them to be legally nonconforming, they have to come in and they have to talk to Haley or to me or to others. And at that time, we're going to have that code in front of us to say, as you're venturing into this new decision, know that this is a possible consequence of it if your business fails. And I think that that's going to be very important, where if we can tell them before they've really invested any money that this is a risk, then they get to make that decision. And then I feel bad for them if their business proposition fails, but I don't feel that they went into it unaware.
So would a tenant be given that information? How would that information be given to the landlord owner?
The application will, if the owner is applying, then they certainly are aware of what's going on. If a tenant is applying, they need to get the owner's consent on that. So we have the owner approval form on there. We can't lead an applicant or an owner to water. And Haley and I were just talking today about a new business going in where we know that it has nothing to do with nonconformities, but it can illustrate a little bit. English is their second language. We've been talking to the real estate agent. We've implored them to have their client, the new property owner, come in to talk to us about a possible business. They have declined to do that. They have now purchased the property, and we have serious concerns that they might be getting into a much more expensive proposition than they thought. We can't force them to come in. We can't force them to understand the consequences of their action, but at least by having this in here, we can notify them as clearly as possible.
Customer Smutzler?
So you use a phrase that is sticking with me, middle ground. I'm not smart enough to think of all the possibilities, but I'm concerned about a 2,000-foot home, if there is such a thing downtown, and maybe 300 feet, a room might be 100 feet, being a business use. And now we're saying the rest of the home has got to have a business use in that 100 foot, maybe just a bedroom. What if we did something more that said once a home hits a 50% threshold of becoming a conforming use, because at that point you've really pushed into that's a business now, as opposed to a person that just uses one bedroom that's 100 square feet. I'm not comfortable with that little piece changing the entire home as much as I want to move this forward. Something more, okay, you've used half the home for business. Next guy can't go backwards and make that single family again. Would that be a workable way of making and getting us there, but not so much with the club here?
I think a council member wants to respond. Council Member Hansen?
I'm confused. Just because you make an office out of the front room or a nail salon, or it doesn't make the entire home zoned commercial, does it? They're still allowed to use the rest of the home as a single-family residence?
Correct.
So we're not saying, huh?
But the next person can only use 90% of the home.
Can only use that portion that remains.
Can use that 10% for residence.
A good example of one that's gone on for years is Dr. Everett's office. Dr. Everett's office has a single-family residence on the top floor. Has ever since I moved to Ferndale, and probably since Gary was born here. And has always been an office on the bottom floor. No one's ever tried to change it, but if we relax this too much, in my estimation, somebody's going to buy Dr. Everett's home. It's no, I don't know if it's in the Everett family, and say, no, I don't want to have a doctor's office down here. I want to reconvert the whole thing back to a single-family residence. And I don't think we should permit that. That's a stretch because it's been years, 30, 40, 50 years, since that home has been a single-family residence.
Yeah, but I see where, and we can kind of use an example because it's empty, so we're not infringing on anyone's rights now. You look at the example that I brought up in terms of the insurance office next to Jensen's Floral.
Yes.
So all they used was one room downstairs, the sitting room, as the insurance office. But under these new rules, now someone buys that house tomorrow,
and says, I'm buying it as a single-family residence. That's great, but you cannot use your living room.
That's what we're saying.
Yeah. There where you see where, let's admit it, we're going the direction we want to, but there will be conflicts.
Oh, for sure.
And that's what Yuri and the staff and the Planning Commission saying is, we're going in this direction for a purpose, but yes, there will be conflict.
And now
I'll let you finish.
Okay. Thank you. Someone that's experiencing a hardship as a result of this can seek a variance. You know, it does not end with, no, you can absolutely not use it. They can demonstrate that they're experiencing hardship and they can get a variance. Also, I reserve the right to be smarter tomorrow than I am today. If we adopt this and if it doesn't work, we can go back and we can change it. And I think that that's another important factor. We're not talking about a great many of these. You know, we've possibly talked about the two in the city center zone that would be affected by this.
But who knows? Councilperson Mutchler and then Councilperson Ingram.
And I want us to move that. I want us to move towards offices and restaurants and boutiques and antiques, all that stuff I want. I want that. But I don't want empty buildings either, because that never helps us. And my concern is, that's a good example of the home that the mayor just mentioned, because just a very small portion was used commercially. I don't know who owns the building. I don't even know if the person who owns that building even knows we're here tonight discussing this change. But they can wake up tomorrow and think, you know, at least I like to have to be a business, but at least I got a family that's living in. And by the way, we want people living downtown. We want them in multifamily. And they say, well, they can move in, but technically, legally, they cannot even go in the living room unless they've got a business going on there. I would just feel better, and I think the case with Dr. Everett you mentioned, that's a large part, pretty significant part of this place is being used for business, it sounds like.
Sure. Yeah, it's probably 50%.
So if we went to somewhere, a more substantial part of the home is being used for the business, that makes sense to me. Half, roughly, would cover that, and it seemed like we wouldn't get in as much trouble down the road with it. That I could support.
Yeah, he can consult with Dan.
Councilmember Mutchler, doesn't that kind of gut the intent of what we're trying to do, though?
I think there are two intentions. We don't want empty buildings. I don't. But we want to move them toward being commercial use, city center uses, obviously. I think eventually we're going to get there. But I think those things happen when it's time to happen.
I'm going to go to Councilperson Ingram.
Well, my question for you is simple. I like the direction. Is there any way that we could touch bases with the real estate brokers so that they know this? Because if I'm a real estate broker, which I would never be, don't trust them, and I saw Ann Klein's house down the street down here, and it's up for sale, and I know she had a business in there, and I know this regulation is in place, I'm going to try and push that thing off as a commercial building. I'm not even going to try and sell it as a single-family dwelling, because it just wouldn't make any good sense for somebody to buy it and not be able to use part of their house. So I'm going to broker that as a commercial enterprise and try and turn the whole thing commercial. I mean, can we at least inform the realtors in the area that when this passes, which I think it probably will, that this is now in place and this is now the city's policy?
I think we could debate it, though, is that to a realtor, I think I'd have to go back to Councilperson Mutchler and agree with him. A realtor has a buyer, and he's not really probably asking that question. I'd be feared that if someone bought that house tomorrow, they're not going to mention the fact, oh, by the way, the living room was used as an office. Mm-hmm. We're going to have conflict.
Yeah.
Councilperson Hanson?
I'd like to move that we pass Agenda Bill 14-06-002 as presented, and I'd like to speak to my motion if we get a second.
001, isn't it?
002. Second. Maybe I'm on the wrong one.
001, isn't it?
Isn't it?
He's getting the correct.
I may have gotten to the wrong thing. You're right. I got too far down. Damn computers, you can't trust them.
That's fine.
Okay, is it 001? 001. All right.
Okay, and
acres or two. This says one.
The one regarding non-conforming use.
Yeah. I have a motion to approve the ordinance.
Okay. Okay. And I have a second.
Okay. And I'd like to speak to it.
The second was?
Councilmember Ingram.
Okay. Councilmember Ingram. Okay. Councilmember Hansen, and then Councilmember Birch.
The reason I'm supporting this without any changes is the fact that what Yori brought up, which is it is possible to change this down the road, and that there is the hint here that a variance, someone decides to sell Ann Klein's, what used to be Ann Klein's office, and says, you know, before we sell this, we want to go through the variance process to see if we can bring that sitting room back to a living room. And the fact that the city will not just go, no. I can support it with that caveat.
Councilperson Birch?
I was just wondering, is that house, the entrance house, listed commercial, or is it listed for sale for residential?
I don't think there's any way for us to tell.
My bet is it's listed residential. Right. But I could be completely wrong. I'm sure I'll find out as I walk home tonight.
Councilperson Metzler?
Yeah, I won't support the ordinance as written, but I'm going to make a motion to go on record to support the to amend the original motion, just to make the modification that the partial home section, excuse my rough language, amounts to 50% change. And then at that point, the entire place has to move forward towards the conforming use. That would be a motion for an amendment to Councilmember Hansen's motion.
Clerk has that language? Yes? Is there a second to the amendment?
I second.
Okay, motion a second for the amendment. And then you want to restate the amendment, clerk, so they know?
I'll try. Councilmember Mutcher moved to amend the motion to modify so that a partial home section must amount to 50% of a conforming use for the use of the full facility to be modified to conform use.
And I just want to speak to that amendment. Can I do that?
It's been moved a second, so yes, you
can. And I agree with Councilmember Hansen. I think that we can come back. I just hear time and time again that developers, real estate people, buyers, they want certainty in this. Because it's not in the ordinance, because it's written the way it currently is, it adds uncertainty. You're hoping it works out. You pray it works out, but we can't guarantee it will work out for them. And again, I want the homes to change to the city center prescribed uses, but I'd rather have somebody in there living taking care of it than it be empty. And my concern is that we end up with empty homes. So I think this is a reasonable change. And with that change, I can support the ordinance.
Anyone speaking on the amendment? Okay, the amendment is before you. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Okay, so the amendment fails. Back to the original motion. All in favor of the original motion, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Okay, that motion carries.
No.
It failed.
It has to have four votes. So therefore, it needs to come back to a future council meeting.
In a different form.
In a different form. Yeah. Correct.
Okay.
How would prevailing side work on that? On the move to reconsider?
The prevailing side were the no votes. Well,
I didn't really.
That's a good question.
Let's research.
Okay, time for research. Moving on. This is the public hearing for
the no votes. Sorry, the no votes would, because they controlled the process, I believe one of them were to switch their stance could be reconsidered based on one of them switching.
Okay.
Okay, moving on. Public hearing on the Meadows preliminary plat.
Okay, so this is a closed record public hearing, which means that the record has been established by the Ferndale Hearing Examiner, and it's attached to your lengthy packet. It also means that the questions that you ask of staff and the applicant are really limited to what is on the record. As the council is aware, there are other decisions related to this plat with and that is a developer's agreement. That does not affect your decision tonight. That will be considered coming up on the 16th. The parties have come to an agreement, we believe. We just could not bring it to you in the time period necessary to be considered tonight. It does not change staff's recommendation whatsoever on the preliminary plat, which is a recommendation of approval. That is also the recommendation that the hearing examiner has established. I'll try to be brief because I think that we have briefed you before, but it is a relatively involved proposal, one of the largest residential subdivisions that the city of Ferndale has seen, certainly over the last 10 years. The proposal is to breathe new life into the Blomquist subdivision, which is located on the west side of the city, just to the west of Horizon Middle School and the Eagle Ridge Elementary School. The Blomquist subdivision was for 99 lots on just short of 70 acres. It was approved. It had its land disturbance permit. They actually started work, and if you drive out there, you can see the work that they did. They stopped that work as a result of the recession. It was turned over to the bank, and the bank has been trying to find a buyer for over the last 5 or 6 years, and we've talked to several people over that time. Late last year, or maybe not late, but last year, a new buyer was found. They looked at the plat and determined that the original Blomquist plat as proposed was from a bygone era, that large lots, exclusively large lots on this property, were not going to be marketable, and so they proposed to the city a whole new planned unit development called the Meadows, 157 units split into three phases, the first phase of which would be generally smaller lots, including some single-family attached lots. Those would be closer up to Thornton. Mid-range one that phase that has a mixture of smaller and larger lots. And then the third phase, which can take advantage of some fairly unique views in Ferndale, which would be generally large lots. As you can see by looking at the map, the plat map, in the center of the property are a number of relatively large wetlands. You can't do too much about wetlands besides protect them. What's being proposed is to mitigate for smaller isolated wetlands kind of on the periphery and to the south, place them into the larger wetland complex, and turn that into a conservation easement that's going to be broken only through the installation of the existing storm ponds that were installed previously, the road, of course, going through, and then approximately 3,000 feet of trails that we've worked with the applicant on to create. As far as the brass tacks of the improvements and the infrastructure improvements, the north-south roadway will be a public road. It'll have all of the curbs, gutter, sidewalks on there, street trees. Thornton will be improved, full curbs, gutter, sidewalks. The applicant is expected to provide to the city coring analysis to determine whether or not the Thornton roadbed can still function. Staff anticipates that a full reconstruct will be necessary, but the Public Works Director has allowed them to submit third-party evidence to determine whether or not it could support that. We've mentioned, and I won't go into really any further detail, a regional sewer pump station, lift station will be required for this subdivision as per the hearing examiner's condition. And there are some 55 odd other conditions of approval that staff recommended, that the applicant supported, and that the hearing examiner ultimately recommended approval. From my personal perspective on this, there's a whole bunch going on with this subdivision where it's large, it's got the existing development to contend with, so it makes it complicated, and the 55 different conditions are probably more than we've put on any other plat, but I think that the parties have worked together well through this process. We would anticipate that they would continue to work together well once the full civil plans are submitted. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have. Again, a lot going on. Can't touch on absolutely all of it right now.
Public hearing, but questions of a technical nature. Council? Councilperson Birch?
There's only one entrance to this subdivision. Is there any more planned?
Yes, and that is an excellent, excellent question. There is only one entrance, and that's at Thornton right now. The city cannot, and neither the city or the applicant can require other property owners to give up property that they're not developing for the purposes of creating an easement or a future connection. However, when properties to the east are developed, the city clearly shows in its comprehensive plan that connection going through. So when they develop, there will be an eastern connection. To the south and outside of the city's urban growth area, there is also the opportunity for a southern connection when that property comes into the city and ultimately develops. Our first priority is life safety. And so we've talked to the police chief, we've talked to Chief Gary Russell about whether or not just a singular entrance represents a safety concern. Their statement back to us was, no, it doesn't. Obviously, multiple entrances would be preferable, but there is no safety concern that we can see as a result of this.
Councilperson Hansen?
You mentioned that the main east, I guess it's north-south corridor, is a public street with curbs, gutters, and sidewalk. The way you mentioned that sort of implied that there are streets within the development that are not going to be public streets?
There are a couple of two. Are they private driveways? And they are serving four or fewer?
There's a boundary road.
I'm sorry, yeah. Eric Whedon is a project applicant. There is a boundary road on the northeastern side, basically between the schools and this development. It was the old driveway for the Blomquist house that was there. That is going to be serving less than 10 lots, and about half of those lots are going to be oriented to the major north-south street. The other half are going to be oriented to this private driveway. That is going to be a private road. We reviewed it with the fire district to ensure that they had adequate turnaround spacing. There's a hammerhead at the south end of it for them to get around. There's going to be no parking, so again, the life safety concerns not there, and it is just a private, really long driveway. And a variance was approved by the hearing examiner for that because we don't normally allow boundary roads, but because of the topography of the site, it would be very difficult to access all of the properties from that lower main road in there. And then there is another private road, and I believe
it's a phase two stuff in way. Is there one, two, three, four, five,
six?
Six.
So in phase two, there is another private road that will serve six houses, and that becomes necessary again because of the wetlands that are there and just being able to fit this development in there. And you can kind of see it. Gosh, look at the major wetlands and kind of go south from that a little bit.
It's pretty obvious.
It's a pretty obvious.
Yeah, it's obvious. Yeah. Councilperson Olson?
So, Yori, are those going to be marked private? My concern is, what if all of a sudden it develops a pothole? How's Bo and his guys going to know that that's not city property? Don't bother with it.
I would anticipate that we could ensure that there would be a sign of some sort or something marking that as private. And in the CCNRs, it would certainly include that. And I'm sure
would
that...
Would you like our public works... supervisor to answer that?
Why, sure.
We'll take our signs are green with white, and we'll take and put private roads as white with green,
oh.
And it'll say PVT at the end. So
there's no concern for you?
No, we know when we get in there that if it's a white sign, green writing, it's private. Molloy Village is the last one that we did it with.
Councilperson Birch.
The first road you mentioned, the private road, you said there's going to be no street parking allowed?
Correct.
And if a family that has three or four drivers living in the same house, nobody's going to be able to park their cars?
No. They will be able to park them on their property, but they will in no case be able to park along that street and block off emergency access.
And they can't have a party at their house and expect...
Nope. They cannot park in that driveway at any time because they would be potentially endangering...
The other residents.
Exactly.
Councilperson Ingram and then Olson.
Yeah, back when Bloomquist was starting this, we went through this all back then. That perimeter road was put there at the behest of the fire department, specifically for fire access to some of those houses that they can't get to from the lower street. And that's why there's no parking lot on there, because they have to have clearance enough not only to get the fire trucks in there, but to get the outriggers out to stabilize them. And you can't do that with cars in the street, so... There is no parking there, and it wasn't in the original Bloomquist plot either. There was no parking on that street.
Councilperson Olson? This would be for the chief. Chief, if it's a private road and it's not ours, do we have any jurisdiction to write tickets on it or issue tow orders?
No, it's a civil infraction.
Thank you.
The chief's answer was they cannot write tickets for civil infractions, but for crimes.
So parking five cars there, like Carol just said, is not a crime. How are we going to deal with that?
$1,000 a day violation.
Okay.
It's not on a public street, but it is a Chapter 17.44 is okay. Subdivision. They're not complying with the requirements of the plat. Will we be able to go out there and use the intimidation, you know, that the police might, I should not say intimidation, use the force of the shield that the police may be able to? No, but we will be able to show them very clearly, you can't park here.
Okay, so you would bring that to the attention of the offending homeowner?
We would, okay. Yes.
Thank you. Okay, any other questions before we go to the public hearing? Okay, seeing none. Okay, at 6:52:34, I'll open up the public hearing. Everyone heard my speech previous, so I won't do the speech twice. Would anyone like to come forward and speak at this public hearing about this subject? Anyone, going once, going twice, going none, no more. 6:52:54, close the public hearing. Awaiting direction from council. Councilperson Mutchler.
I had a question that I've been pondering all week. This part of the city, we being the city, once upon a time, zoned at 10-5, which is the part of the city we're sort of thinking we like larger lots, larger homes, whatever it is. So somebody comes in a PUD and says, you know, I don't want to do that. I want to do something smaller. I just find it sort of interesting that just sort of occurs without much resistance, I guess. And is that just the nature of a PUD? It doesn't really matter what council decided. I don't know when that was. We went to 10.5. Was that a long time ago or 20 years ago or 10 years ago?
It was 40 years ago.
Okay. We're all dead. Those people are all dead. I don't care what they did. Well, where I'm heading with this, it just seems like we're sort of saying step by step, that 10.5 isn't very helpful to us. I'm noticing up here that we have at least two of the PUDs in the 10.5, which are 6,000-7,000-foot lots. And so I want to suggest that maybe the 10.5 should go the way of the dinosaur or something like that. Having said that, I'd like to make a motion that we approve the proposal here as stated in the staff report.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Good deal.
Thank you, Council.
Okay. Next up, ordinance, code enforcement revisions.
Okay. This is not a public hearing. last fall, the city council made a big change, and from my perspective, a very successful change to redo our enforcement procedures to make them more global so that we handle all violations the same way, and we don't have stormwater violations treated differently from parking in the middle of the street violations, in the middle of a private street violations. It also made our process more transparent. Where we have a clear notice of violation, we have a clear process through which we go through and through which someone who has, who we believe has violated will be able to preserve their rights to appeal our decision to the hearing examiner, and if we are incorrect in our decision, to be able to proceed as quickly as possible. As I said earlier on another matter, we do reserve the right to make ourselves better over time, and as part of our new insurance provider services, they have stated to us that they would much rather work with us before we get into an argument with a property owner to make sure that the codes that we are enforcing are actually defendable, which is a novel idea, and I think that it not only are they a little bit more affordable than our previous insurer, but I think that this in the long term will continue to save us money. So our new insurance provider, one of their attorneys, looked at our enforcement chapter, and as you'll recall, it was about 50-some pages, and 99.9% of it they were completely good with. They said, this is good. This is the direction that most cities should head, where you don't have all those different enforcement chapters. But would you consider adding this here or changing this here, or maybe you could cite more to this RCW instead of this WAC? And that's what we are recommending doing, is complying with the recommendation of our city attorney and our insurance provider's attorney in order to make this chapter better. The one policy change that is included and that I fully support is when there is a violation, let's say that there's a guy up over here who has overgrown shrubs, and there's a guy down there that has overgrown shrubs, and I handle this guy and I say, that's $1,000 fine, and then Haley handles that guy and she says, that's a $250 fine. They might be best friends, and they might say, I had the same violation as you, but I got a totally different charge. What we're proposing to do is to create a universal fine. If you violated, you get a $1,000 fine, but there is language on there that says, but if you comply by the deadline, the reasonable deadline, that fine may be reduced or even waived. That way, everybody's starting off from the same point, and as I think Councilmember Mutchler said the other day, it's not staff is seeking compliance. Our energy shouldn't be spent trying to figure out what the appropriate fine is, and making it council's directive instead of staff's opinion. So, any questions? No public hearing is required.
Councilperson Mutchler was first, and then Ingram, and then Bush.
Yeah, and all I meant by what that is that you should just say that's what council wants. That call your council member. Don't blame the messenger.
Don't blame the messenger. And we appreciate it.
Councilperson Ingram.
I move to approve Agenda Bill 1406005.
Second.
Seconded by Councilperson Olson. Councilperson Birch.
Well, I do kind of have a problem with the amount, the maximum. You're going straight to the throat. And I wrote up a little scenario for me that I would like to read. I refuse to cut my grass. So you give me a violation for $1,000 civil penalty is issued and imposed on me. I've just been found guilty, and the city tells me what I've done and what I'm ordered to do. Then I have failure to comply, an additional $1,000 per day during violation. Okay? Does the city have a number of days they can continue the daily fines? 10, 20, 30 days or more?
In theory, it could be unlimited if the property owner cannot comply or refuses to comply.
Okay, and then if I don't do what I'm told, the city or the director obtains a warrant and enters my property and does what he or she wants to, i.e. cut my grass, and then the city files a lien against my property because I didn't cut my grass for the cost and the civil fines and the attorney fees. And then the city can foreclose with a lien on my property. Correct?
Correct.
Then the city can seek criminal violations against me because there are so many potential violations that can happen because of $1,000. I feel the residents of Ferndale should not fear their own government. Civil violations should not be coercive, and a potential fine of $25 to $50 is sufficient to get a person's attention.
$25 to $50 is insufficient to get a lot of folks' attention, and which is one of the reasons why we wanted to go to a higher amount, because we did have a number of people that said, I'm willing for that to be the cost of doing business to make a point, where $1,000 potentially per day, there aren't too many people, and I'm not being flip, but for $365,000 a year, that is a hefty penalty that really no one is going to be able to pay to make a point that they refuse to comply. That's my response.
Let's say, okay, I'm cited for, I have a messy yard. So you cite me for high grass. You cite me for firewood that's not stacked. You cite me for garden tools that are not put away. My driveway has holes. You cite me for a broken glass on my garage door. So you're looking at $6,000 or $7,000, maybe $8,000 in separate citations.
You can certainly come to us and explain the reason for that. And if you feel that then staff says we don't care or not responsive or just are simply jerks and you disagree, you can appeal that to the hearing examiner and make the argument that we had a couple of logs that fell over in the windstorm, and does that really constitute a nuisance? Where the purpose is, staff is taking the list of nuisances or other violations that the council has adopted and said, okay, these are things that are nuisances. Staff is saying, well, that looks like that's a nuisance. If we're incorrect, the hearing examiner can certainly say, no, you're incorrect, and if so, the appeal fees are returned and there are no fines. But ultimately, it is, if it is a question of this should not be a nuisance, that's an argument that they need to have to this body instead of to staff, because staff is just saying this shows that it's a nuisance and this is a penalty associated with it. If someone thinks that cutting grass should not be a nuisance.
Well, there's still representation. It's like you and I decide not to speed down the road, but I know that if I speed and our police stop us, I will go for a judge and debate whether or not I'm going to get that ticket. This would be the same situation. They'd be issued a citation, and if they refuse to pay it, their next step is to go before a judge to argue that. We can debate whether or not the way we're doing it now works, and that would open up a giant amount of debate. My opinion is the way we're doing now is not working. Councilperson Metzler.
So, Councilmember Bursch is, I think, setting the table for two issues. Once the council decided certain things are nuisances, whatever they are, that needs to be enforced. There needs to be teeth behind it. And that's what Lord Bionette's doing here with this ordinance. Whether those items should be nuisances or not is a completely different issue at a different time, I believe. I think that's how we should look at this day. If we have a nuisance ordinance, it needs to have some teeth to it, and that's really where, and some uniformity and some fairness, and that's what you're doing. If certain things like picking your nose or cutting your grass or not shouldn't be on there, that's a different discussion for a different day, I believe. Because that's fairly addressing what she's bringing out here.
I think so.
Okay.
Is that really addressing that? Are you going to stand in front of your congregation and say, the city's just passed this, I as your council member voted for this, I want you to be aware that the city can come after you for these nuisances?
I am prepared to do that. And if citizens want different things considered nuisances or not, they can ask council to make those changes. But these are things that are considered nuisances right now.
And how do you find the people? How do you find the properties and you're finding them? How do
we drive around
looking in yards? And
we don't have enough staff time. No, we don't have enough staff. It's generally complaint-based. From time to time, we work with our public works crew, whereas they've driven around, they might identify life safety issues where the grass or the bushes have grown up where now it's obstructing vision. And then we will send enforcement letters out. Homeowners associations, last year we got reports of just pervasive issues in some subdivisions, and so we took the step of really having a community-wide meeting. But we don't have the time or the ability to respond to really anything but complaint-based, unless there's a life safety thing, and then we really do have to act.
Councilperson Mutchler.
And I tend to think that we live in a compassionate community, and people do help out. I know for a fact that someone from my congregation mowed Reverend Ferguson's yard once or twice because I don't know if she couldn't or wouldn't, whatever it was, but people will do that. I think this community will help. There are those that can't help themselves and those that won't help themselves. I always sort of felt like nuisance owners, as opposed to those that won't do it for whatever reasons. Those that can't for good reasons, I think people chip in.
And that is really the approach that we take as well, where our main effort is compliance. If someone came to us and if they said, I don't have the ability to do this, I'm disabled or I don't have enough money, then certainly, one of our greatest resources in City Hall right now is the mayor, where we let him know of, there was a house that a lady had abandoned. It turns out that she was not destitute, which was our first concern. But we went to the mayor and we said, gosh, is this someone that simply cannot afford to make these improvements? No, this person chose not to. It does change the tenor of the discussion a little bit, and I think that we are still small enough, and Councilmember Watson and I had this discussion just the other day. If enforcement was as simple as just writing a notice of violation and firing and forgetting, and we either get a fine or we go to court, it would be a lot easier. But every notice of violation comes with it discussion with the person. Maybe they don't know, maybe there's education, maybe there's working something out. So it's a significant amount of time to get it right. And I think that we do try to get it right. We do try every time. I think that we do it right most of
the time. The city has, in my office, I have a fairly extensive list of volunteers that would. Most of the time I get calls, I don't really have anything for you, but we have a list of volunteers, churches especially, that will step forward and help citizens. And again, if you pass this ordinance, they have a right to go before a land use judge and argue whether they think it's a nuisance or not. And that judge will decide on our regulations that we write whether it's a nuisance or not. So it's not like you are not represented in this. You have a motion and a second before you.
We do.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Councilperson Birch.
I just think that the maximum fine is too high.
Duly noted. Council members, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye. No, I mean.
Okay. Motion carries.
Thank you, Council.
Okay, next up is Star Park funding. Our clerk will represent that issue.
Council members, thank you for your patience. Hopefully we can end the meeting on a happy note. So this has been such an interesting meeting with just the failures of the Community Development Department. Very briefly, I would like to read to you a list of folks who are pretty amazing. Sam Boulos, Woods Coffee, Fast Cap, Lummi Nation, Stacy Malone Miller, Cascade Dapo, Wacom Builders, Cascade Prosthetic and Orthotics, Ace Hardware, Samson Rope, Moms Club of Ferndale, RDS, Smetana Family, Dueling Family, Karen Bowden, in honor of her father, Donna J. and Charles C. Cole Foundation, Black Pearl Bookkeeping, and 155 other people who have raised $22,545 in 3 weeks for the Ferndale Star Park. We have had just like an amazing time this last 3 weeks working on the Star Park Playground Project. 12,000 square foot, ADA accessible regional playground facility that will serve all of the Ferndale School District. The council in the past has graced us and honored us with providing the land for this project at the southern portion of Pioneer Park, just below the historic cabins. We are working aggressively to earn a 50% matching grant from the state of Washington's Recreation and Conservation Office for this project. And now what we're hoping to do is come to council and hopefully continue to commit to funding for this project. What we have proposed is 5% of the REIT II funding over the next 6 years, $70,000 out of about $1.4 million for this project. The rest of the 95% obviously will go to street projects. REIT II, Real Estate Excise Tax II funding, can only be used for street capital improvements and park projects. It can actually be used more extensively under parks maintenance, operations, and capital projects, but for streets, just capital. We brought this item to committee, and the committee unanimously approved a kind of a two-pronged, two-phase approach with finance director and approving this, basically saying it's supportable, of $20,000 this year for the project and the remainder in 2015, just so that we can spread out the cash from REIT II. Obviously, we're paying for Church Road with that and all that, so that works out really well. The project at Pioneer Park has been on the books or been sought after for almost two decades. As I was researching this, I realized that the first resolution the council passed trying to get a grant funding from a private nonprofit called Kaboom was for a Michael Moore Park in Pioneer Park. We all know now Michael Moore Park is in the southeast corner of town across the freeway. That was supposed to be in Pioneer Park. I had no idea. I mean, and I think a lot of people forgot about that. That was supposed to be our first major regional playground, and it unfortunately, it just hasn't worked. This is now our best opportunity to make this happen. And when we went to the state, they were very impressed. We'd only been fundraising for a week. They were impressed with the $10,000 we had raised in a week. They were very impressed with the story we had to tell from this small community that has really stepped up. And with the council's contribution, I'm feeling so good about this. Jory doesn't want me to say this, but I'd be so hard pressed to see how they wouldn't say yes to us. We left that meeting and they were shaking Jory's hand, just, you know, thank you for telling your story to us. So we're really hoping for the council's commitment. I appreciate the unanimous vote by the committee, and I appreciate Councilmember Olson staying to listen to my spiel as well. He asked very good questions about this. You know, he noted that, you know, we're asking to prioritize over streets, and that's absolutely true. And kind of what I said to him at the meeting was just this one time, you know. And obviously, what we're asking for is 5% of REIT II funding over the next 5 years. This is very doable. The finance director agrees with that. So, with that, I defer to council.
Councilperson Ingram and then Bush.
I move to approve Agenda Bill 14-06-006.
Second.
Okay. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed. Motion carries. Good
Thank
job,
you,
Sam.
Mayor?
Don't think that happens that easy all the time.
Mayor Jensen?
Yes, Councilperson
Mossberg. I really don't know how to do this. I'd like to make a motion that our Ferndale's biggest kid, Sam Taylor, and his cohort, Yori Burnett, are the first ones down the Mondo slide when it's built.
I think we can make that happen.
Okay, I want to know whether Sam badmouthed the community director in front of the state committee.
No, I'm sure he did. Oh, Sam said that his job was to look pretty.
And it worked.
Okay, moving on from this. These boys are having fights again. I'm going to send you to your room in a couple minutes. Mayor reports, the mayor report has none. Council reports. Any council reports? Councilperson Ingram. Councilperson Munchlis after that.
if anybody just wants to have fun, there's an electric car rally in Winthrop this weekend.
All Tesla or anything electric?
Anything electric.
And where is that?
In Winthrop.
Okay, Councilperson Mutzler?
Perhaps we all got the email today that ConocoPhillips is having their quarterly breakfast and with County Councilmember Carl Weimer. It's at WeQ on the 26th Thursday, I believe it, probably 7:30 to 9 o'clock.
Firm with Brandy or she'll get mad. You want to get Brandy mad. Okay, any more council reports? Staff reports. Finance Director.
Briefly, I want to thank the council for their support of the water sewer revenue bonds. Last week we had a very successful sale on Wednesday. 97% of the issue was purchased by investors. That's a very high percentage. The only maturity that didn't sell to investors was the year 2015, interestingly enough. And the bond broker purchased those 2015 bonds for resale in the next few weeks. Really good news on the interest rate. Now, 3 years ago, we did water sewer bonds, mostly water bonds for the well water project, at 4.42% interest. Just think about that, like a 20-year mortgage. This is 20-year bonds, 4.42, 3 years ago. 3.44 this time, almost 1% lower on 20-year money. They had a good bond market. We had a late entry by Build America Municipal, a bond insurance. So we did buy bond insurance on top of the A3 underlying Moody's investor services rating. So it was very attractive to investors. So we'll get our money June 10th, and $8 million goes to sewer projects, $500,000 to storm. Thank you.
Good job.
Very well done.
City Administrator?
A couple of quick things. I want to not let Mark get away too quickly on the bond insurance. To give you a little perspective, before the AIG downfall and the financial downfall, bond insurance was very common. You buy the bond insurance, you don't pay it, the insurance company will. As a result, a lot of smaller cities especially didn't bother getting a bond rating because they could just buy bond insurance and you get that warm, fuzzy feeling out in the world. Well, after the financial world imploded, bond insurance market disappeared. There were just no companies that did it. So our last bond issue that Mark mentioned, bond insurance wasn't an option. There was no one that did it. This time around, really at the last moment, this bond insurer who wants to remake the market came forward and said, we got a deal for you. And Mark said, nope, too late. We're happy. So came back and said, well, I got a real good deal for you. And actually lowered the premiums even further to the point where not only did we get the bond insurance, but it also meant that on a net present value basis, we saved about $70,000 on the 20-year just because of the bond insurance, and that's even accounting for the bond insurance premium. So Mark saved us in a pretty easy fell swoop, $70,000, as well as working to get a good bond rating. So I'm really appreciative of that, and I think over time, every penny counts, and $70,000. The other thing, last Tuesday we had our emergency drill up at the EOC, and I wanted to let the council know that it went very well. I mean, for as chaotic as it was, and it was a simulation, but believe me, simulations can be rather real, especially in the area of emergency management where chaos reigns, and they really did put us through the paces. I think we did fairly well. It was the first one we did, and we've done some after-action review, and we'll probably be do things even better next time. So I hope to get to do this every year. I wish Councilmember Watson was here because she was one of the major reasons why we did this, when we did it, and how we did it. So it was certainly worthwhile. Not that you didn't, but I know I feel a little more comfortable knowing that should anything of serious nature befall the city, we've got a cadre of staff that will just step up and do what needs to be done. We've got a police chief that's, by God, he's been there and done it, and he's the voice of reason and the air of calm when all the rest around you is going to pieces. So I was very happy at how everyone performed, and I think you all should be very proud of the staff you have.
That's for Ingram.
Just a quick observation, because we talk about this as a county EOC, and every time we have an exercise down there, what happens if you're in the middle of an exercise and the phone rings and somebody says, there's a bus in the ditch and it's on fire.
It's a real one. Yeah.
And it's a real one.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's like, you can't plan for these things. It's like, we talk about that several times at County EOC about how do you filter it?
Right.
Because it's like,
really? Wait a minute, you can't have a real emergency. We're
having a practice emergency. You can't have a real emergency.
Yeah, and it is extremely realistic. We had a pretend Facebook page and a pretend website. We had all the social media was going on, and they had folks that were you know, saying, oh, so there was the feedback coming not only through the phones that were running off the hook, but online. We had folks that were responding correctly, incorrectly, you know, so we were able to tamp that down. So in fact, I mentioned this to the mayor, in the app, because it wasn't real, it actually was quite enjoyable. I was so tired at the end of the day, just that much mental thought. I can't imagine what the folks at OSO, when they had to do this for 12 hours, 24 hours, 36 hours, the drain it has to take on folks' abilities to do what is best is. I have a greater appreciation for the folks that work in all the emergency management.
Community Development Director.
Nothing.
Clerk's Office.
Nothing.
Public Works.
Nothing.
Police. We've already done council reports. Councilperson Bursch.
Oh, it's just an observation that Mr. Peterson saved us $70,000 in the bond. And we just gave that away to the Star Park. That's great.
Different funding
source.
Different funding source.
Motion to adjourn. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.